Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Tom Rush is a gifted musician and performer whose shows offer a musical celebration, a journey into the tradition and spectrum of what music has been, can be, and will become. His distinctive guitar style, wry humor, and warm, expressive voice have made him both a legend and a lure to audiences around the world. His shows are filled with the rib-aching laughter of terrific storytelling, the sweet melancholy of ballads, and the passion of gritty blues. Rush's impact on the American music scene has been profound. He helped shape the folk revival in the 60s and the renaissance of the 80s and 90s, his music having left its stamp on generations of artists. James Taylor told Rolling Stone, "Tom was not only one of my early heroes, but also one of my main influences." Country music star Garth Brooks has credited Rush with being one of his top five musical influences. Rush has long championed emerging artists. His early recordings introduced the world to the works of Joni Mitchell, Jackson Browne, and James Taylor. And in more recent years, his Club 47 concerts have brought artists such as Nancy Griffith and Sean Colvin to wider audiences when they were just beginning to build their own reputations. In 2012, he began a revival of his Club 47 shows at Boston Symphony Hall. Tom Rush, 50 Years of Music, featuring old friends. The show was streamed live and has been released as DVD, as a DVD video. Today, Tom Rush lives in Massachusetts. When he's not touring, his voice has grown even richer and more melodic, and his music, like a fine wine, has matured and ripened in the blending of traditional and modern influences. He's written a number of new songs. He's doing what he loves and what audiences love him for, writing and playing passionately, tenderly, knitting together the musical traditions and talents of our times. Please welcome American folk and blues singer, songwriter, guitarist, and master storyteller, Tom Rush, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Good to talk to you again. It's been a while.
That's quite a pile of stuff to live up to, you know.
Well, I trust you will.
Okay, I'm going to try.
First of all, happy birthday.
Well, thank you so much.
You celebrated...
It was a fun one. I did a show.
Right.
My birthday was on Saturday the 8th, and I did a show in my birthplace, Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
You had some special guests, and tell me a little bit about the show. How'd it go?
It went great. It turns out there's I moved up to Kittery Point, Maine a couple of years ago and discovered there was a bunch of good players up there that once in a while got together and called themselves the Rushmores and did songs that I've recorded. And they do it on my birthday. And this year I called them up and said, "You might want to rethink this because I'm doing a show across the river in Portsmouth." And then I hired him to be my backup band. I haven't had a backup band for decades. So I got to do some old songs like Kids These Days and On the Road Again and songs that need a band.
Right.
It was a lot of fun.
Now, are these guys going to travel with you some more on the road, or?
I think this is a one-time thing, but you never know. It did sound good. So we might get together again. I don't know. This is my 79th birthday. The big 80s coming up.
Wow.
Probably going to get in some major trouble for that one.
Well, you know, 80's the new 65. How's that?
Well, that's how fast people drive.
Well, you know, I was just, you know, I can't take this with a grain of salt, but you said this is one of your farewell, this is your first annual farewell tour. So what does that come down to? What does
the
that
first
mean?
First annual, right.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I put out a t-shirt and it's going to get to, you know, collect them all. Second annual, third annual.
That's
we'll
funny.
See where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I took my my son to see the farewell tour of Kiss, and that was 20 years ago.
Well, I know, and Cher's been doing the farewell tour for... It occurred to me that actually my farewell tour began the first time I ever got on stage.
That's funny.
So this could be my 62nd annual farewell tour, but I'm not going to go there.
Well, you know, this is good because it prepares audiences just in case you do want to call it quits, you know? Then you can say, I told you guys.
I got a kid in college. I can't call it quits real soon.
Yeah, no. But you got too much music. Let me tell you, man, this latest album was tremendous. I think it's one of my favorite albums to date.
Well, it's my favorite so far, but the next one's going to be better. I've been doing a lot of writing for whatever reason. I don't know.
Huh.
But a lot of songs keep popping out, and I think the next one is going to be... I'm really looking forward to it.
Why do you think they're popping out? Is there a change in your life or different scenery or, you know?
Oh, there's changes in my life. But also I think I'm just, I'm loosening up and letting the songs happen instead
right.
of trying to make them happen. Just letting them happen. And that seems to work a lot better.
Well, your latest album, Voices, which, you know, it came out, I think it was a couple of years ago, maybe, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I gave it 5 stars, man, because I really love it. And,
thank you.
And I wanted to ask you about Elder Green. First of all, who are the background singers on that?
Oh, boy, you're going to put me on the spot here. I know Matt McCullough has been traveling with me for about 5 years, was singing on that. And I'm blanking on the other names. I'm not good with names, Ray.
They're really good.
Not good with names, Fred.
They're very, very good. I like them. The other thing, I guess that song is that Rory Block that you got that tune from?
Nope, I didn't. I can't remember where I got that. I thought I got it. I think it's in the liner notes. I thought I got it from my friend Peter Coyote, the actor.
Okay.
But he denies any knowledge of it, so I don't know where I got it.
And then I was thinking, when I first heard the title, I was thinking of Tom Patton, you know? Elder Green Blues. But then,
right.
Yeah. So that's...
Well, there's some of it in there, but Patton can't understand what he's saying. Or I can't. So anyway, I like the song a lot. Wherever it came from, I didn't write it.
Yeah.
Wherever it came from, I like it a lot.
Well, there's only 2 songs on the album that you didn't write, I think. And
correct.
That one
and Karina Karina.
Exactly. You know, Come See About Me, another very cool track. A little slide guitar, right? On that one?
Yep. Yep.
Who did the slide? Did you do the slide?
Yeah, that's me.
That was incredible. And then My Best Girl, which is about your guitar?
That's correct. I have a guitar with a naked lady entwined with a snake inlaid on the neck. It's a biblical theme, Ray.
Oh, is it?
yes, absolutely. And I'm kind of conflating that guitar, the naked lady, with a guitar I've been playing for 40 years. She's kind of beat up. She's not as young as she once was, as the song says. But yeah, it's a song about my guitar.
Now, where did that idea with the snake, and the naked lady come from?
I bought an Epiphone Texan.
Right.
Back before you were born, in Cambridge in, I don't know, early 60s.
Okay.
$167.
Uh-huh.
With case. And it was new.
Right.
And I thought, well, okay, this is a good beach guitar. If somebody steps on it, I won't care. But then I kind of fell in love with it, and I started fancying it up, and Epiphone was sold to a Japanese company, and they were putting out pretty crummy guitars for a while, so I took Epiphone off the headstock, and I asked this young woman in Boston who did really nice inlay work if she would do a reclining nude with a snake on the neck, and I asked how much it would cost, and she said, would $150 be too much?
Oh, my gosh.
And I to my credit, I didn't try to talk her down. And she did a fabulous job, but that guitar burned up in a fire in 1990.
Really?
And I had a conversation going with Martin for a while about making a Tom Rush guitar. And I finally, we talked about the wood and the neck and everything, and finally, I got up my courage, and I said, can we have a naked lady with a snake on the neck? And the line went dead. And then finally, this really nice company in Canada, Mackenzie and Marr, called me up and said they wanted to put out a Tom Rush guitar. And I asked them about the naked lady with a snake, and they said, sure, no problem. So it's in production. Mackenzie and Marr will sell you a naked lady. They're really nice guitars for a really good price.
Yeah. I bet you're the only one with a naked lady with a snake on your guitar.
So far.
Yeah. So far. Somebody will copy that one.
I, in fact, trademarked it, so.
Oh, good.
Don't even try, Ray. Don't even try.
Well, I do play some guitar, but I'm more of an electric guy.
Okay.
Yeah. So you won't have to worry about it.
You need to have an electric lady with an electric.
There you go.
Snake.
That would be cool. Yeah. Next track, Life is Fine. Very cool whistling in the beginning of that. I love your lyrics. You know, my baby loves, my life is sweet, laid back tune. In fact, I'm getting fatter in the tune. I love you moster.
I have fun. They hired a whistler to come in and whistle the introduction. There's a guy in Nashville who is a professional whistler.
Right.
And he wasn't getting it right. And they said, well, how do you think it should go? And so I stepped up to the mic and showed him what I thought it should sound like. And the producer said, okay, we got it.
You didn't need the guy.
Yeah. So now, if this guitar playing thing falls through, I have an alternate career.
There you go. The Andy Griffith Show could have used you way back when then.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah. Track 5, Cold River, Coyote's Meal.
That's a little bleak, that one.
Yeah.
I actually wrote that one. My daughter had a duo, favorite musical duo called the Civil Wars.
Okay.
And I wrote that song with the Civil Wars in mind, and I was going to pitch it to them, and then found out that they had broken up 2 years before.
Oh, man.
So I had to do it myself.
Great song. Great song. And then track 6, Far Away, Tell My Troubles I'm Not Home Today. I mean, that, you know, who thinks of these things? Only Tom Rush.
Well, I don't know where they come from, but I'm happy they do.
I'm glad they do. You know, I guess age is agreeing with you, you know?
Must be so.
Yeah. Heaven Knows, some banjo playing on that tune, right?
Yep, we had a little bit of a bluegrass tinge to some of them.
Now, who played banjo? Do you play banjo?
No, I don't do banjo.
Yeah, that's a hard instrument, I would think. And Carina Carina, of course, which is a Bob Dylan tune.
No, it's a traditional tune that Bob Dylan did.
Okay, well, that's the last time I heard it, I think Bob Dylan sang it. But
yeah, no, he sang it too, but a lot of people have done it. It's as it kind of
right.
grew up with a lot of different persons, depending on who was doing it. And, but Dylan didn't write it. He did record it.
Yeah, he did a cover tune. Another cover tune. Another track that I really liked, very interesting lyrics. If I Never Get Back to Hackensack. That was
There's a backstory there.
Okay, I like to hear that.
We did the recording. It was down in Nashville with my old friend Jim Mooney producing.
Right.
And we did the recording that made the basic tracks on Monday, Tuesday, and half of Wednesday. And Tuesday night, as we're packing up, Rooney got all upset. He said, wait, we've only got 11 songs. I thought we had 12. I wrote one down twice. And he was really upset. And I said, Jim, there's no law or anything. He said, no, but it's customary. And so I said, okay, Jim, I got it. Calm down. It's covered. We're going to number the album the way Trump numbers the floors on his towers. We're going to have songs, we'll have songs 1 through 6 and 8 through 12. Nobody will notice. And he wouldn't go for it. So I had to go back. I had to go back to the hotel and write a song that night. And that's If I Never Get Back to Hackensack is what happened.
So you just went back to the hotel and boom, you wrote a song. And here you go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, it was one I sort of had in mind for a while.
Right.
I had some bits and pieces to it. I didn't write it totally from scratch. I had bits and pieces to work from, but.
So what's the story there? You there was a girl in Hackensack, right? You met a girl in Hackensack?
No, it was actually a gig in Hackensack.
Oh, a gig in Hackensack. Okay.
Didn't go well at all.
Really?
I learned that night that I should not play in bars where they have a mechanical bull. And I've never done that since.
They just didn't pay attention to the performer, or what was that all about?
Well, I had to ask him if they would turn off a mechanical bull during my set.
Right.
They sort of reluctantly did. But then a fight broke out at the bar.
Right.
And it just kept going on and on and on. And I beckoned the manager over. He said, can't you do something? He said, no. I said, but why don't you call the cops? And he said, those are the cops. Two off-duty cops. Duking it out.
Oh my
God. It wasn't a good evening for me.
But you know, it makes for a good song and good story.
It did. I like the song that came out of it, so okay, I forget back and say.
Yeah, I think it's one of my favorite songs. You know, okay. Now when you go back, it's going to be a big deal.
Maybe they'll have a parade or something.
Yeah, I think so.
If they forgive me.
Yeah. It's kind of like Ricky Nelson with Garden Party, you know, when he talks about that.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought of that.
But. Yeah. Kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Well, man, I think your story's better. Then you said you were going to go down to Nashville one last time.
Yeah, that was, I don't know where that came from. I was in a wistful mood. And I kind of picked Nashville because I was going to Nashville to make the record. I had no other reason for it.
And another favorite track, How Can She Dance Like That? That was cool. Because I can see that. I can identify with that one.
Yeah, I've got a guy sitting at a bar in mind. A guy just watching this young girl dancing by herself.
But when she turned up the heat, you can feel the sizzle.
Yeah, I introduce the song when I do it on stage. I say, this is a late 50s rock and roll song that I just wrote. And that's kind of the way I think of it. I think this is something that could have come out in 1960 and 1957
yep.
or something.
That great lyrics, great title, you know. All of your songs, it's like picturing a movie in your head, you know. And that's exactly what I did, you know.
Well, that's certainly the way I think about Cold River. It's a theme song from a movie that doesn't exist.
Exactly. Right. That means you did your job as a writer.
Well,
yeah. Who plays piano on that song? How can she dance like that?
That's Matt Nicola.
Okay.
He's this young guy who's a monster talent.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking someday soon I'll be opening shows for him. But I brought Matt down to back to Nashville for this project,
mm-hmm.
and he blew them away. I mean, these are some of the finest players in the world.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of looking at Matt and saying, what? Where did that come from? He was over in the corner playing Chopin on the rickety upright piano.
Really?
At one point.
Huh.
During a break. And I heard one of these session guys say to the other, I don't think he's from around here.
That's funny.
And he wasn't. And yeah. He isn't.
I'm sure you'll be using him again, huh?
Oh, yeah. We've been playing together for about 5 years now.
About 5 years. Wow.
We're on the road all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's my favorite track. How Can She Dance Like That? Cause,
okay.
Yeah, I do love that song. Wind Her Up and Let Her Go. Love the lyrics, man. And, of course, Voices, title track, great song. Very poetic. Very, you know, excellent track. Love the album. Thank you
so much.
And
we're doing a bunch of those songs on stage. Matt and I are about to embark on a rather exhausting month of March, going down through the Mid-Atlantic, down into Florida and back. And it's all on TomRush.com.
Yep.
Go to TomRush.com. Buy some CDs while you're there.
Oh yeah.
But the schedule, the whole schedule's out there. And then we're headed over the ocean to England in June. I haven't been across the puddle for decades.
Really?
But I'm very much looking forward to that.
I think, let's see now, you had your birthday kickoff. That was in tonight. You got the 11th. I'm looking at your schedule here. March 4th, you'll be in Asheville, North Carolina.
Yeah.
You'll be in Georgia after that on the 5th. You'll be in Stuart, Florida. Oh, you got a bunch of Florida dates. That's awesome. You got Stuart. You got Key West. You're going to be great in Key West. Key West.
That's a fun town.
Oh, yeah. You fit right in there. West Palm Beach on the 10th. Then you'll be in Virginia on the 19th of March. And then just an hour away from here in Clearwater. One of your favorite venues, I think, right?
Yep. That's the band America.
Yep.
Asked for me to come and be on the show with them that night.
Great band. Great band.
I haven't worked with them ever before, but I'm very much looking forward to it.
God, when I saw you last, you played with Loggins and Messina. And it was a...
that was a while ago.
Yeah, it was 20,000-seat Capitol Center. Sold out. And it was a great show. You played a lot of those arena shows back then, huh?
Over the years, yeah.
Yeah.
I did a bunch with Linda Ronstadt, a bunch with Loggins and Messina.
Yeah, I'm looking at your schedule for overseas. Oh, my goodness. That's a lengthy tour. I see shows all the way up to September.
My agent has got me some bookings now in 2021 already.
You're kidding me. Wow. Huh, that's great.
The tour in England, I'm playing this. I'd never heard of the Glastonbury Festival. I said, okay, it's a festival. Sure, I'd love to do it.
Right.
My daughter, who's 20, said, Dad, you're playing Glastonbury?
Yeah, that is big.
And apparently it's huge. It's like Woodstock, except it happens every year. And okay, I'll be there.
Well, you got a pretty good agent there.
I guess so.
he's booking you in decent, really great venues.
Well, there's a different agent for England. This guy works at a company called Asgard and called me up and said, do you want to come to England?
Right.
Because my family situation is allowing this to happen. I'm going to go.
You know, a lot of guys, a lot of legends in the music industry, as they get older, there's either, you know, their wives are helping them, you know, book shows and things like that, or they're doing it on their own. And that's a tough task to do everything on your own.
I did that for a while. I had my own booking agency. And,
right.
And I decided it just was too much. It was taking me away from, you know, playing the guitar and writing songs too much, so... I gave that up, and now I'm working through an agency called Skyline.
Skyline, right. I've heard of them. Yep. Well, they're doing
a good job for me.
Yeah, they're doing all the right things, it seems like. Something's got to inspire you to write some songs. I mean, either a particular location, you're taking a walk. I've heard artists tell me they take a walk and things come to them. Moments in your life. Is there anything like that that inspires you?
Not really. It's, I've said before, I don't know where the songs come from. They just arrive, and I think my job is to get out of the way and allow them to arrive and not try to, the Never Get Back to Hackensack. Okay, I sat down and I deliberately wrote that one.
Right.
But most of them, are just the ideas sort of float in through the ether, and I scribble them down, and I've got pages and pages. I've got like a 4-inch stack of yellow sheets with scribbles on them, and sometimes I, go through there and think, oh, okay, that scribble goes with that one over there, and if I put them together, maybe, and then I have another line, and it just, I try to stay out of the way. The more deliberate I try to get in writing, the worse the results are.
Right. You know, the Beatles did it that way. I mean, I'm going to put you up in that level. Yeah, they were pretty good. But they wrote these They wrote these tunes really quick, and boom, 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 it was done, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
I remember talking to Peter Asher. He was there in Paul's. They were in Peter Asher's sister's house. Paul was staying there or something like that, and Paul and I think John were downstairs or in another room. And they wrote Hard Day's Night, and he was the first one to take a look at it. He said, hey, what do you think of this tune? But they wrote it, so fast, So it's like, where'd the inspiration come from? Well, I guess they're like Tom Rush. It just
absolutely
comes to them.
Absolutely. Bad and smoking a lot of dope, probably.
Yeah, they did in the early days. Yeah, that's true. Sometimes that helps. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you just get hungry.
Yeah.
Yeah. One thing, you're a smart guy, man. You graduated from the Groton School in Mass?
That's true.
Wow. I mean, some big heavyweights graduated from that school. Franklin D. Roosevelt, number one?
Yep.
That was a tough school. How did you manage? I guess you're just a smart guy, huh?
Well, my daddy taught at St. Paul's School in Providence, New Hampshire, which is another one of those fancy boarding schools for rich kids.
Okay.
Not so much anymore, but that's how it was.
Right.
St. Paul's, apparently, before my day, but in the old times at St. Paul's, the students arrived with servants.
Really?
And, yeah. Yeah, they'd come with a butler.
Wow.
Not anymore. But anyway, my daddy taught at one of those schools, so as a inter-school courtesy.
Right.
In those days, you didn't send your kid to the same school you were teaching at. You sent them to another similar school, and that's what happened to me.
Wasn't your mom a teacher as well?
She did not. She had a full-time job as a faculty wife.
Okay.
A lot was expected of faculty wives. She had to host visiting dignitaries that would come and stay in our house. She had to have tea for the students on a daily basis and a fancy tea on Sundays.
Wow.
And do flower arrangements for the chapel and blah, blah, blah. Somebody pointed out to me that when the prep schools first started hiring women as teachers, they basically lost half their workforce because the woman teacher's husband said, I'm not going to arrange flowers at the chapel. I've got a job of my own. And then the women started saying, well, if he's not going to do it, I'm not going to do it. And so they lost all this free labor that that kind of come with the territory.
Yeah.
In the old, unenlightened days.
Now, were you an English major?
At college, I was.
At college, okay.
I wanted to be a marine biologist, but the biology introductory course at Harvard was so bad.
Really?
That it killed any enthusiasm I had.
Yeah.
And then I just, sort of out of thin air, I said, I don't know, English lit, okay, English lit.
Hmm. Yeah, my daughter's an English major. She's a teacher, and her husband's a teacher.
Well, you see, that was my problem, is I couldn't be a teacher because my dad was a teacher, and I had to be a rebel.
Yeah, exactly.
So, couldn't do that. Fortunately, people were starting to pay me to play the guitar, which I still find amazing. So I figured, okay, I'll play the guitar for a little while until I figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up. And I am still trying to figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up.
Well, I think you're doing okay.
Well, I'll stick with it for a while, but I don't know. I may go back to being a teacher.
Yeah, you never know. Last time we talked, you had a big hit, the Remember song. And
that's so big hit.
Do you remember?
On YouTube,
it's got over 7 million plays.
Less lucrative than other hits, but
yeah,
it's got now 7.5 million plays.
Isn't that,
something like
that's
that.
Incredible. You know, it. You know why? Because it touches so many people. It's because it's true.
Well, the part that surprises me is that my crowd isn't all that internet savvy.
Uh huh.
Or they certainly weren't back when this first was posted.
Right.
And so I was wondering, my daughter insists that 7.5 million plays are probably just one guy who
yeah, right.
Can't remember he's already seen it.
Our daughter's great. I got one of them.
Yeah. Very supportive in their own way.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's say I was reading this, I think you said this, right? I've been waiting 45 years to be an overnight sensation, and it's finally happened. A video clip of my performance of the Remember song has gone viral. I felt terrible at first, thinking I was being accused of being a musical equivalent of Ebola. That's funny, but your children explained that this was a good thing.
Yes, yeah. They had to talk me through it.
Yeah. How many children do you have?
I've got two grown-up boys from a prior administration.
Okay.
One lives in Scotland, one lives in Arizona.
Right.
And my daughter is a junior in college.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Yeah. I've got grandchild number 5 on the way.
Oh, good for you.
It just came all of a sudden, boom, 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 boom. All of a sudden, we're loaded with kids down here.
I was hoping my kids would start providing grandchildren, but it isn't happening.
Really?
But I joked for a while that my daughter Sienna was, I'm having my own grandchildren. I had to cut out the middleman.
Well, you know what's going to happen? Once you start having grandchildren, the touring's going to go away. you're gonna want to, babysit and do all kinds of stuff. It's just natural.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to take them on the road with me. Teach them how to tune guitars.
That'd be cool. Yeah, there you go. You need a few roadies, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, is your son's into music?
One of my boys plays the guitar for the fun of it.
Okay.
And he's pretty good.
Right.
He's pretty darn good. But he's not into it as a profession. The other one is an artist, not so much a musician, but a photographer and visual artist, and does some really nice stuff.
Oh, good. Does he have a website that we can go on and check out his stuff? Or?
His name is Benjamin Rush.
Okay.
And he goes by Orion Rush, O-R-I-O-N.
Right.
His middle name, because Benjamin Rush was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. His great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. And so if you Google Benjamin Rush, that's what you're going to get.
Huh.
I haven't thought that through. The internet hadn't been invented when he was born, so. So it wasn't a concern at that time. But yeah.
Okay, we'll look him up.
Yeah, he also runs my website. If you go to tomrush.com, down at the bottom,
okay,
you'll you'll see his credit.
Yeah, it's a good website, by the way. Some guys don't update their websites. I don't know why, you know, and they got like things in there that are like ancient and, you know, so.
Because they don't have Benjamin to take care of it.
Exactly. You probably have been told this, but since you've been, you know, you graduated from the Groton School with all these prestigious people and politicians and, you know, I mean, the list goes on and on. You know who you look like when you wear white. You've probably been told this.
No.
Mark Twain?
Oh, that guy. I've heard of him.
There's a few pictures.
When I wear the white suit, it makes it even worse.
Oh, yeah. It's the white suit and the white, you know, your hair and the mustache. I mean, that's a good thing. That, you know, maybe he's a distant relative. Who knows? Maybe that's why you get all these great songs.
It could be.
Yeah. But I had to say that. Your big break came from a radio station, didn't it?
I'm going to say that again?
Your big break in music when you got on the air. Didn't you know some guys on radio back in the day?
Well, when I got to Harvard, I was asked if I would take over this folk radio show on Harvard's FM station.
Right.
And I had a 30-minute Wednesday night, 7 to 7:30, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Folk show where I had guests come on the show. And I would play a couple of songs, and they'd play more songs, but it was kind of a song swap. Tilted in the guest's favor, of course.
Right.
And we'd talk a little bit, and then the heavy review. But across the river, there were these two guys at WBZ in Boston, Dick Summer and Jefferson K, and they had folk shows, and they would invite me over to be on their show, and I kind of thought this was, you know, they were kind of like me. I had an audience that numbered in the dozens, probably. What I didn't know was that these guys had, WBZ had 50,000 watts clear channel.
Right.
And I didn't know what that meant, but 50,000 watts is as powerful a signal as a station can have.
Exactly.
And clear channel means nobody else has that frequency.
Yep.
And these guys got fan mail from Guam.
Wow.
And had regular listeners up in the Maritimes and down into Maryland and out into Ohio. And so being on their show was probably my big break, and I was totally oblivious.
Hmm.
I was just, hey, these nice guys, I'll go over and shoot the breeze and play some songs. It'll be fun. And I had no clue.
Huh. But usually that's the way it happens. When you're not expecting something and you don't try hard enough to get what you want, sometimes it just comes and falls in your lap, you know?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes it works that way.
Sometimes it does work like that. Talking about the Beatles again, a lot of people, you know, if they do their history, they're going to find out that you had an album out in 1962, right? Tom Rush at the Unicorn?
62, yeah.
And that was before the Beatles came to America. I mean...
Yep, it was.
That's incredible.
Yeah, by the time I graduated from Harvard, I had two albums out.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, I took a year off. I dropped out for a year and then came back.
Right.
So that might be considered cheating, but by the time I graduated in 64, which was a year behind schedule, I'd made two albums.
You know, you say, I'm 61 years old, so I do remember the early 60s. That time, 62, 63, that was a great time for folk music.
I remember thinking in Cambridge, I mean, the scene in Cambridge was just astounding.
Uh-huh.
The Club 47.
Right.
And I now own that name. But it was a little coffee house, six seated to 80 people, and they brought in the Legends. You could go into this little bitty room that was, as chance would have it, one block from my dorm. And you could listen to the Carter Family and Flatt and Scruggs and Dorman Bowe and on and a lot of the old blues guys. And I adored the blues guys.
Yeah.
I was an English major, and what they did to syntax was just amazing.
Right.
But you could go and listen to all these legends. And then there was also were not at all interested in being professionals. They were just playing because they loved the music.
Right.
But they were really, really good.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, this isn't normal. This can't be normal to have this much great music around all the time. And sure enough, it's not normal. It wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't normal, yeah.
It was an extraordinary time.
It was. We were very lucky, man. The 60s, and I was a DJ back in the late 70s. So I was, I was spinning top 40 music back then. But I grew up listening to some great, great music in the 60s. And in elementary school, I remember we would sing folk songs. That was the big thing in school. You know, all the great, very famous folk songs we would sing in school. And, you know, we like, you know, guys like Burl Ives, you know, were really big back in the day. And
communist witch hunt thing.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. Huh. I really dug folk music, you know. It was like real Americana. You know, that's what we had. It was, you know, it was our thing, you know. And
those songs are very, very durable because they were written, I guess the word written should be in quotes, they were made up by people who were illiterate.
Yeah.
And the songs were passed down from generation to generation just because people remembered them.
Exactly.
And the parts that weren't memorable enough got replaced by each generation or in each town. You know, the next town over, they'd have a slightly different version of the same song.
Right.
But it was kind of Darwinism, musical Darwinism. The stuff that was memorable got remembered.
Yeah.
And the stuff that wasn't got forgotten and replaced with something else. And eventually you had a song that was totally memorable.
Well, that's it. A lot of people have a hard time remembering lyrics, you know. I'm one of them, I'll admit. I don't know why, but folk music, you know, you remember the lyrics, you know.
I think it's partly because most of it is story.
Yep.
It's easier to remember a story because you know what happens next.
Yeah.
And so then that gives you kind of a railing to hang on to in terms of remembering lyrics.
Right. You know, I interview a lot of guys, a lot of legends, a lot of rock heroes, but I still say there's nothing like a lone performer up on stage with a guitar and a story. I mean, that's it, you know?
Well, it's part of what I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Is having kind of a one-on-one with the audience. And I do, you know, I weave some stories in between the songs, and I started doing that because I figured out very early on that the audience likes you.
Mm-hmm.
They are much more apt to like the song you're about to do.
Right.
So I would try to charm them with a little song about the story, a story about the song, or just a story about something. And it, you know, it seemed to work well. But now I get requests for the stories. Tell the one about the guy from New Hampshire.
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of requests for that, Doug.
There's an album I made a little while ago called Trolling for Owls. It's on my own label.
Uh-huh.
And because it's on my own label, it was out of print for about 6 years.
Okay.
I'm a rotten administrator.
Right.
It's just back in print.
Oh, okay.
But it's a collection of funny songs and stupid stories that people seem to love a lot. And I'm told there should be a warning to not operate a car while listening to the album. Many people say, I almost drove off the road.
Now, how can we get this album? Where is it available?
It's available at TimeRush.com.
Okay, good.
At my shows, but other than that, it doesn't exist.
And what's the name? What's the name of it again?
And at the shows, I do.
What's the name of it again?
Trolling for Owls. Is the punchline from one of the stories.
Okay, yeah, we're going to promote that as well. I'll make sure we tell everybody about that. How's are you still friends with Jonathan Edwards?
Oh yeah, he's a good buddy.
I interviewed him back in 2015, and I was just wondering how he was doing. I think we were doing Tomorrow's Child, the album when his album came out. But
right.
Is he doing okay?
He's doing great. He called me on my birthday.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, I was in the middle of a sound check, so I didn't get to talk much. But,
okay.
Yeah, he's a good friend. He's, I like him a lot. I love his voice.
Yeah, he's good. He's really good. Tom, if you, here's a, I've asked you this before, but now that we're on the radio, I got to ask you again.
Oh my God, we're on the radio?
If you had a Field of Dreams wish, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh boy. I really don't know. Now Matt Nicole would probably say Chopin. I don't have an answer.
You think it'd be a blues guy or a folk guy?
I don't know. I'd like to do something with a bunch of different people. I've never done much co-writing.
Mm-hmm.
I did co-writing with Trevor Beach, who was my guitar player for years and years, but it was basically, I would write a song, he would tell me the music sucked, and change the music, and then I'd have to change the lyrics to match the new music.
Right.
That was co-writing. But I don't remember ever sitting down with somebody and collaboratively writing a song from beginning to end.
Huh.
And it's because my songwriting style is to kind of, you know, go into soft focus and just let ideas float by and attach themselves to one another.
Right, right.
Having somebody else in the room yelling out ideas kind of interrupts the trance, you know, gets me out of the trance stage.
Exactly. Well, we'll leave it at that, I guess. I think last time you mentioned Robert Johnson.
Robert Johnson, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I don't know if Robert Johnson would want to have anything to do with me. He was such a talent.
Yeah. You know, there's not many guys like you anymore, you know? There used to be, you know? I mean, guys like Jim Croce, Harry Chapin, who was one of my favorites. I mean, there's a lot of people that used to tell stories, but there's not many around anymore, which is very sad.
I'll have the field to myself soon.
Yes, you will. You're going to get more popular and more popular.
It's really odd.
Yeah.
Maybe I already am.
Maybe. Yeah, that's what I think. Tom, you got anything else you'd like to promote or chat about? You got the big tour coming up. We're going to steer everybody to your website.
Shows. We talked about the website. We talked at length about the Voices album, which I do think is my best work so far.
It's great. It's great. It just stands out, you know?
Well, it was also the quickest album I've ever made. It was sort of boom, boom, we were done in a week.
You did it the Beatles way, you know?
I'll tell you a little thing. It's the only album I've ever made that I actually enjoy listening to.
Really? How about that?
All the rest of them, I'm listening for mistakes.
Yeah.
That could be a little bit louder. Oh, dear, I came in a little too soon.
Right.
So that doesn't, for whatever reason, it's probably because it was quick. I didn't have to spend hundreds of hours listening to the songs over and over and over and over. You know, I would go out for lunch, I'd come back, and the engineer would have a rough mix for me. And
yep.
I said, oh, that's cool. I like it.
Yeah.
And also, Jim Rooney is a fabulous producer for me because he has no patience for perfection. Perfection is boring.
Yeah.
He wants it to sound like a human being actually sang this song.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of rough, got a rough edge somewhere. That's good.
Well, it makes you feel like you're listening to it live, like you're at a club or something, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's more immediate. It's more like, this guy is actually singing for me.
Right. That's exactly how it sounded, you know?
Well, good.
It was...
Jim Rooney's technique worked.
It did work. I think he had a little bit to do with it, too, but...
Well, maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
And you know what? It's okay to have a few mistakes in a record. There's a lot of, you know, great records that have mistakes in them, you know?
Well, yeah, it makes it interesting. And again, I do think perfection is boring.
Yep, I'm with you on that. I agree 100%. Well, Tom, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show. You're going to be a busy guy for the next year and a half or so. So hope you can take a break. I'd love to see you in Clearwater.
Come on by.
Yep. You in America. That's a great show, you know. And
it should be. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be awesome. You know, a lot of people love Ruth Eckert for the acoustics. They say the acoustics are great. That's why people keep coming back there.
Right.
Yeah, and it only holds like a few thousand people, but they get the big acts. My cousin came down from Baltimore and took me to see Styx. I've never seen Styx before, and you know those guys used to fill out stadiums, but they would rather come now and you know sell out a 2,000 seat arena. You know.
Because I'm very much looking forward to that. I haven't worked with America before.
Uh-huh.
It should be a lot of fun.
It should be, and Clearwater's a great town.
Yes, it is.
All right, Tom. Great talking to you again, man. Again, happy birthday. Good luck with the tour, and keep in touch. Let me know when the album's coming out, all right?
I shall do.
All right, man. Take care, Tom.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Purchase the latest release by Tom Rush entitled Voices. 5 stars all the way. Great album. You can buy that at Amazon.com. It's a 2018 release. There's going to be a new album coming out from Tom, and we're waiting desperately to hear that. It's probably going to be even better than Voices. Tom Rush's Voice is the CD that fans of modern folk music and contemporary singer and songwriters have been waiting for 50 years. For more information about Tom Rush, including upcoming concert dates, and he's got a lot of them coming up, visit www.tomrush.com and www.facebook.com/TomRushMusic. Very special thanks to the great John Lappin Enterprises for arranging this interview with Tom Rush and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. It's real news, people. And please check out my new book. It's finally out. It's entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free, Series 1. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. Let me tell you who's in the book. Chris Squire, Dr. John, Greg Lake, Henry McCullough, Jack Bruce, Joe Lalla, Johnny Winter, Keith Emerson, Paul Kattner, Ray Thomas, Ronnie Montrose, Tony Joe White, David Clayton Thomas, Mike Love, Tommy Rowe, Barry Hay, Chris Thompson, Jesse Colin Young, John Kay, Julian Lennon, Mark Lindsay, Mickey Dolenz, Peter Rivera, Tommy James, Todd Rundgren, Dave Mason, Edgar Winter, Frank Marino, Greg Rowley, Ian Anderson, Jim Danny Mangrum, John Anderson, Lou Graham, Mick Box, Randy Bachman, Robin Trower, Roger Fisher, Steve Hackett, Annie Haslam, Melanie Safka, Petula Clark, Susie Quattro, Colin Blundstone, Dave Davies, Jim McCarty, and Pete Best. And a few of those guys are no longer with us, but I was very fortunate to have an intimate conversation with them before their passing. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at PublicityWorksAgency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.